UFOs? Are they aliens? Government secret projects? The imaginings of disturbed individuals? Or just outright hoaxes? We're here to find out. Welcome to Jim Harold's UFO Encounters.
Welcome to UFO Encounters. I am Jim Harold and so glad to be with you once again. Now, I have to say something. When you deal in a topic like UFOs, sometimes there's a lot of sameness. You know, you go over the same territory. I've talked to people who have been critical of, let's say, let's talk about Roswell for the 57th time. However, it's really refreshing when you have a completely new take on it, a completely unique take in something I've never really realized or heard of, but we're going to explore it today with our guest, Mike Cleland. He is the author of the recent book, The Messengers, Owls, Synchronicity, and the UFO Abductee. Mike Cleland is an avid outdoorsman, illustrator, and UFO researcher. He has written extensively on the subject of alien abductions, synchronicities, and owls. It was his own firsthand experiences with these elusive events that have been the foundation for his research. His website, hiddenexperience.blogspot.ca, explores these events and their connections to the alien contact phenomenon. His site also features extended audio interviews with visionaries and experts examining the complexities of the overall UFO experience. Beyond that, Mike is considered an expert in the skills of ultralight backpacking and has authored or illustrated a series of instructional books focused on advanced outdoor techniques. He has spent nearly 25 years living in the Rockies, and now he lives in the Adirondacks. Mike, welcome to the program today.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure being here.
Now, in that bio, it mentioned your own personal experiences. So can you tell us a little bit about those experiences and some of the things that led you into the interest of UFOs in general and specifically UFOs and owls?
Well, if you've been doing this kind of talk show, and I assume your audience is, let's say, up to speed on some of these things. So I'm 53 years old now, and as a child, I have, you know, these things, I have these memories. I have a missing time event that had an associated bright flash in the sky. Me and a friend were walking home from what would be a high school football game, and we got to this one point. Boy, I could go right back to my old neighborhood and put an X on the sidewalk within a millimeter, I feel, to where we were standing. And we saw this bright light, and it was jarring. It felt like God flipped a light switch.
Wow.
And the nighttime sky, it's a calm, beautiful night in the Midwest. I grew up near Detroit. And, you know, so lovely, pleasant night. And then it felt like God flipped a light switch. Sky lit up orange. Sky turned back to normal. The entire sky. That's my memory. My friend later said he saw a UFO with lights and everything, and I have no memory of that. But in the moment, we were 12-year-old boys, I remember it was like, it was jarring. It was really, you know, unsettling and weird, and nothing matched, right? I remember even as little kids, we went through the little checklist, you know, was it lightning? Was it, you know, was it an explosion over the hill? And so when I got home, I wanted to be home in time to see a television show. So I felt like I knew exactly what time it was. It should have been about 9:30. And it was, in fact, 11:30. So the 11 o'clock news was ending. My parents were angry at me, and they were out. Why was I out so late? And I'm like, I'm not out late. It's you know, it's 9:30. So that happened. I had around about that same time, I had what I felt was a fairly close up sighting of a structured craft in the nighttime sky, close enough that it was, you know, it wasn't some, you know, wispy little dot off in the distance. It was a, you know, big metallic looking thing in the shape of a coffee can that was hovering and descending in a very, very odd, smooth way. So let's jump fast forward to when I was 30. And I have a memory of waking up in the middle of the night, sitting up on my elbow in bed, bright light shining through the window, in the bedroom window. I was all alone in the house at the time. And out in the yard, right up close to the window, and my bed was pushed right up to the window, so there was no problem me looking out the window. Right up close to the window were five spindly gray aliens. I heard a voice in my head that said, "Oh yes, they're here. now is the time to put your head on the pillow and shut down. And that's exactly what I did. So that memory is very fleeting, but I will say, I can say it was very dreamlike in the sense it was so bizarre, but I feel pretty strongly that it was not a dream. So all this stuff had been, and I've got a bunch of stories. Those are the most sort of telling of the accounts. So all my life I had been, I kind of knew the implication of those stories. You know, I had been reading, and I started obsessively reading UFO books around the time I was 30. Actually, right around the time I saw those beings in the yard. And I kind of knew the implication, but I wasn't going to go there. Boy, I was denying, and I knew there was going to come a day when I would have to look into my own memories. So, but I was still pushing it away. There was pressure, right? You know, you get a pressure cooker on the stove, and it starts to hiss as the pressure builds inside.
Right.
I felt like that's what my life was like because I knew that I was, you know, by not looking into this stuff, I was. Yeah, I recognized that there was something behind the curtain, but I did not want to pull the fabric back. So I in October of 2006, which is now 10 years ago, I went camping with a friend. It was kind of someone I had just met. Mm-hmm. And her and I went camping. This is when I was still living out west, and we went to a nearby spot in Grand Teton National Park. And it was, you know, lovely evening, and we didn't take a shelter. The weather was supposed to be beautiful, and it was one night, so we were planning just to sleep under the stars. And as the sun was setting, an owl flew over us. And then another owl. And then a third owl. And these owls flew around us and landed near us and sat on branches near us for the time it took the sun to set. And even after it was dark, when we laid ourselves down and looked up at the sky, you know, beautiful Rocky Mountain, high elevation,
right,
spectacular ocean of stars, these stars would momentarily get blotted out in complete silence just for a second. And we realized that the owls were swooping down low right over our faces and blotting out the stars. Now, that happened early in the week. And afterwards, we were both like, wow, that was super cool. That was really cool to see all those owls. I said, listen, let's go camping one more time. So we went out 4 days later, we went out camping again. Same person, different location in the mountains. At sunset, an owl showed up, and then another owl, and then a third owl. And the scene replayed. You know, basically these owls were landing near us. They were on tree branches near us. And both times, like at the time, I didn't have the nerve to say this to anyone, but I'm saying it now, and it's in the book. Both times when those owls showed up, there was a very clear voice in my head that said, this has something to do with the UFOs. And I knew it. And it was a powerful sense of knowing that I can't trace it back to anything, but that was like the sort of heart-pounding realization. So, you know, in essence, I wasn't seeing anything that unusual. These were real owls just flying around, I don't want to use the word psychic. I don't know if that's the right word, but like the intuitive voice in my head was screaming, this has something to do with UFOs. So from that point on, I began looking into my own experiences. And at the same time, when I would talk with folks, right? So I was pretty aggressive about it as far as like, damn it, I'm going to solve this. I haven't solved anything, but I feel like I've come up with some good stories for doing this research. But I would ask people who, you know, either researchers or people who've had the direct contact experience, I would ask them this question. I would say, have you ever had any strange or odd experiences with owls? Now, it's not 100%, but it's enough that there's certainly a pattern of people seeing owls, real owls, in conjunction with either UFO contact events or in their life that feel somehow associated with these UFO contact events. So that's how I got started on it. And since then, I've been collecting and archiving and cataloging and then writing and publishing a book on this, on these owl experiences that other people are having. My own are listed in the book too. I got a lot more than just what I shared, but So that, you know, your question was, how did I get started? And there's the long-winded answer.
Now, I will share a story that happened in my family where it wasn't specifically about owls, but it's a story I've heard since I was a little kid. It involved my dad and my late mom. And this was when I was a very small baby, so I'm guessing this was probably somewhere around 1970. And we were visiting in rural West Virginia, my grandma, and my dad mom left me there. My grandma was babysitting, literally. And they went off to, well, I think basically it was like a lover's lane. I'll just be honest. As much as I don't like to think about that, I think that's what it essentially boiled down to. So anyway, they went out there and they parked and were looking at the sky. And very eerily, similar to your story, a huge flash lit up the sky. And my dad said, at that time, I think he drove an old 1968 Buick LeSabre. If you remember those, old enough to remember those, big black one. I still remember that car he has when I was a little kid. But anyway, he said the lights were so bright that he could read the numbers on the speedometer. Then he said, and my mom collaborated this 100%. And neither one of them, working class, came from West Virginia, both of them, moved to Cleveland. My dad was a steel worker, very salt of the earth, no getting in touch with his chakras or anything like that in his background. So he said he turned to his left and he said he saw what he described as a man with a welding mask on who held up his hand. And basically, my dad said, we're getting the HE double hockey sticks out of here. So he peels out. And on the way out, and this is like a dirt road in a secluded area, they said there were several on the one bank alongside the road, several of the biggest birds they had ever seen with a large wingspan. Now, my dad said they fully expected the next day to hear on the news, whether radio or television or whatever, that there had been something causing this big, bright light. And nothing. And they don't know what it was. My dad, who's still living, swears to this story to this day. And my mom agreed with him. The only where they parted companies, she didn't see the man with the, quote, welding mask. So how does that map to stories that you've heard? And what do you think?
Well, you know, I've never heard that exact story, obviously, but I have heard stories that contain those elements and those flavors. I'm going to, you know, the flavor, the mood of that story, I'm going to, you know, oh, good grief, I can't even begin, hundreds of times, many hundreds of times. So a couple things. Okay, so if they're seeing a bird at night, it's highly probable it would be an owl, right? That's really the only bird
Makes
you
sense.
See at night, right? Makes so sense. Most birds are day birds. There's very few nocturnal birds, owls being one of the very few. So, and now, I have a lot of accounts of people leaving a site where they had literally been looking at the stars. They're out looking at the stars. Something odd happens at the site. They leave the site on the road driving back. They will see a large owl in the road. I have one account in the book, which is interesting. So it's a family. It's a woman and her boyfriend at the time, and the woman had, I think, two kids. So they go to a park to go sky watching at night. And they look up at the stars, and then all of a sudden they're like, oh, well, we should go. Let's get out of here. But they go to the car, and then they all say, I don't feel very good, and they all fall asleep. And they wake up a little while later, and they say, oh, that's weird. We fell asleep. Let's get out of here. Let's go home. So they, as they're driving down the road, the mother and the two kids, they turn a corner, and the boyfriend, the man, they turn this corner, and the man, his memory is of, excuse me, of seeing an owl, and then the mother and the two kids scream reflexively. And the guy says, like, what are you screaming for? That was just an owl on the side of the road. And they all of the three said, that was an alien.
Oh my.
So there's a there's something within the literature that is, you know, the UFO abduction research literature that is commonly reported, where people will see. Well, here's the typical story. I mean, it's recounted in the book in one form or another many times, but here's a typical account. Someone is driving home, either they're with someone or alone. They see a very large owl in the road. They come to a complete stop. Often the owl is described as being tall enough to look over the hood of the car and into the driver. Mm-hmm. Driver pulls right up to it. It's tall enough to look over the hood. Now, there's no owl on earth that's, even if you get a little car and a big owl, the owl still can't look over the hood. They just plainly are not tall enough to do that. But that's not what people are reporting. They're reporting a 4-foot tall owl. Now, later they arrive home. Perhaps they'll have some missing time. It should have been 9:30. It's 11:30. And if we go one step further, if these folks, and there's a lot of accounts of this, where people will have a story that just like what I told, they'll go through hypnotic regression and the hypnotherapist will say, okay, well, describe that owl. And they'll say, well, it's kind of tall and skinny and it has big black eyes and a bald head and it's wearing a skin-tight uniform. So what they end up describing is not an owl. So the implication is that there is a screen memory in place. Now, I have no way to verify or say what may or may not have happened to your parents. All I can say is that what you shared in that story is very familiar.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I look forward to sharing this with my with my dad, who is 80 years old, but I think he'll be very interested to hear about it.
There is a section in the book, and I have to dig it out a little bit, where there's a handful of accounts where people drive home. There's one very strange account where they were a boyfriend and girlfriend at the time. They're now married. They were driving through rural Puerto Rico down this dirt road in a rented car, mm-hmm. and they all of a sudden the wife goes, "Why are those kids out here?" And she describes seeing kids dressed as ghosts. She said something very unusual. She said they were moving in a very flowy way. So it was very weird. They were moving all flowy, which gives me the kind of heebie-jeebies thinking about that. And the husband said, "Those aren't kids. Those are owls." And so she saw one thing, he saw another. The implication is, and now this woman has also had a lot of other odd experiences. The implication is that let's say these are the UFO occupants, these are the aliens, the prototypical gray aliens. They were projecting some sort of psychic image into the mind of both of them, but they were projecting two different images. One woman saw kids in the ghost costumes, and the man saw owls. Now, there's a couple interesting things. They were in a place where they said it was lit up, like from a streetlight right above them, all lit up. And then and afterwards, they said, that doesn't make any sense at all. We're on this rural dirt road. There'd be no streetlight back there. And then, and curiously enough, that was the night the man proposed to her.
Huh.
So you have a highly charged event, you know, proposing marriage, and this is this extra event is kind of overlapped with the whole thing. So, you know, that's just one small story out of a great big book. But you know, so that's the kind of accounts that I wrestle with in this book and try to make sense of.
Now, something that occurred to me as you were talking about that story is something that we have covered on various podcasts and programs that we have done. Is the topic of black-eyed kids. I'm guessing you're familiar with it, and it's usually not associated necessarily with the UFO phenomenon specifically, but I'd never thought about black-eyed kids as possible screen memories. I've never thought about that.
Well, that's one way to look at it. I mean, so the implication is that these UFO occupants, whatever they are, you know, whether they're from another planet on a metal flying saucer or they're some sort of denizens of some alternate reality that would invade our world the same way that a ghost would, right? So I don't know the source, and I don't pretend to know the source, but if they have the psychic power to make a person think, and I've talked to these people, they say that was an owl. I mean, it was an owl. It would fool any person on earth. And then they go on to, but it simply wasn't acting the way an owl would. It was associated with this other UFO thing. So if they have these beings, these entities, whatever they are, whatever their source, if they have the power to control people's, you know, to control what people are perceiving, then absolutely, why couldn't they create the illusion of a black-eyed kid? For what purpose, I don't know. But you, once you go down that avenue of speculation, sure, that's as valid a hypothesis as any.
Now, one question I would think would be I'm sure you've heard it before, is why do you think whatever, let's say that something is using owls as screen memories, why would they or it choose specifically owls? Do you have any kind of speculation on that?
I have got gobs and gobs and gobs of speculation. I have no answers, right? So you can speculate all you want. Doesn't mean you know the answer, right? So yes, there's a whole chapter in the book. Now, this is where I don't want to say I'm going to go out on a limb, but here's the avenue of thought that I followed in this. And all the puzzle pieces are laid out in the book clearly, and I'll try to do it a little more succinct here. If there's a reason they are showing us owls, now they show us other animals too. People see deer, people see squirrels, people see a Jesus is actually pretty commonly reported. You know, I woke up in the middle of the night and Jesus was standing next to the bed. Mm-hmm. And then or dead relatives are commonly reported. Some of these may be screen memories. I mean, obviously, if people say I was this 4-foot-tall squirrel standing by the side of my bed and I woke up, you know, you can, you know, that's probably not the case.
Right.
So if they're using owls, my sense is the reason is that the owl holds an holds an archetypal power. So we find owls scratched into cave walls that are 30,000 years old. Somebody made the effort to go into the dark and scratch that owl on the wall for reasons we don't know. My sense is that owls, right from the beginning of time, have held a power. So I've talked to people all the time like that see owls. And now let me tell you, nobody blows it off. Every, you know, you can blow off seeing a bunny rabbit or something in the woods, but if you see an owl, people come back to me and they say, oh my God, I saw this owl. It was incredible. It was sitting on a branch. There's nothing, the owl is not doing anything unusual, but they have a mystique about them. And I think everyone recognizes that. And that means people today, that means our ancient ancestors. They recognize there was a weird, eerie power about this animal. So the owl. Now, archetype is one of those lofty words. It kind of implies that there's a subconscious meaning to you're seeing one thing, but there's a whole deeper meaning it'd be hard to articulate clearly, but we can tap into it on a sort of primal level. Luke Skywalker is the archetype of the hero. So you know, you can see the movie Star Wars, you don't need to know that, but when you see it, you are tapping into that archetype on a subconscious level. It's the same thing when you see an owl, you're tapping into their archetype. And the mythology of the owl throughout all the ages across the planet is that the owl can see into the darkness. And the owl can fly into the darkness. We all recognize that. Everyone knows that from ancient man to people today. And the metaphor that comes out of that, and the metaphor that then paints the symbolic mythology, is that the owl can travel to another realm. By flying into the darkness, it is traveling into another realm. And there comes a responsibility with that. It will come back with a message. So when people see an owl, the archetypal metaphor is that they are receiving a message from some other realm. That realm may be the land of our ancestors, the land of the dead, the land of the gods. It could be the ethereal realm of the UFO occupant. I don't have an answer to any of this. This is what I explore in the book.
One thing you talk about, and you mentioned it in one of the stories, a story about the marriage proposal, but I found interesting was this idea of owls and synchronicity with UFOs, without UFOs. Can you talk about owls and synchronicity a little bit?
Well, synchronicity is, you know, it's funny because I asked, you know, Micah Hanks?
Not only do I know Mike, he writes for my website, jimherald.com, and we co-host another podcast together.
Great. Okay, good. Well, yeah, so I got to, yeah, so I'm good pals with Micah. And so Micah, you know, I interviewed him one time and he was like, you know, I have nothing. So early in the interview he said, I have synchronicities all the time. Synchronicities follow me around wherever I go. And so he was making this big, and he has these wonderful stories. And then later on in the talk, I said, well, you know, any odd experiences in your life? And he's like, nothing. I have no odd experiences. Nothing paranormal at all has ever happened to me. And I'm like, wait a minute. Earlier, you just said synchronicities happen to you all the time. And I think that a little bell rang in his head. You know, synchronicities are unexplained, powerful, paranormal events, in my opinion. Somehow, and there's a lot of synchronicities in this book, and somehow I just get the sense that there's the script writer of reality penciled this stuff in, these synchronicities, to play out at the perfect moment, at the precise, for a perfect reason, right? So these odd events. So here's this, so synchronicity. So it's actually a really good movie, and it was called Time is Art. And it's a movie about synchronicity. It's a documentary. It's very well made. It's got kind of an artistic bend to it. So it's not a very intellectual documentary. It's a much more of a emotional documentary, I guess. These husband and wife filmmaker are exploring synchronicity in this documentary, and they're exploring art and they're exploring the creative process. So they went to San Francisco, and there's all these wild murals, right? So totally beautiful murals in the Mission District. So they're filming these murals. And they had filmed a murals. They just finished filming a mural, and the host of the documentary walks past this mural. It's the mural's got a flying saucer in it. It's got an owl in it. It's got like a shaman's doing a sort of Native American ceremony in it. And then they filmed some other owls too. So, and then they set the camera down, but the camera was still running. They just kind of set, right, camera's running, video mm-hmm. camera, they set it down, it's still running, and they didn't realize it, but when they reviewed the footage afterwards, it captures a very odd craft sort of descending in the sky in this odd way. I've looked at this thing so many times, this little clip. It's all of about 4 seconds long. It's not a balloon. It's not a kite. It's not an airplane. And so there's, you know, it's not a helicopter. So here's a filmmakers making a documentary on synchronicity. They are photographing owls and UFOs in a creative process in a mural. They capture a UFO in the process on tape. And I went and sort of asked the filmmakers. I talked to the woman in particular and said, "Have you had any odd experiences in your life?" And she told me the craziest. No, actually, I'm not going to say crazy. That's a terrible word to use. She told me a very frightening story about. This is some years ago. She was with this fellow, and they were in Germany. And the guy, there's all these lights outside the cottage they're staying in. You know, like the all of a sudden the yard. It's nighttime. The yard is completely lit up. He says, "I'm going to go. I'm going to leave." He just gets up and walks out. She looks out. If I remember correctly, she saw gray aliens outside. She hid in the house, and he eventually came back in, and he wouldn't talk about what happened. Mm. So here's like these some. So the people. Creating a documentary from the point of inspiration, right? For all the right reasons, they're inspired to create this documentary, and they, you know, they capture a UFO, and then the filmmakers themselves have these odd stories in their life. So it becomes very difficult to, you know, which thread are you pulling on when you're trying to untangle this knot, you know?
Yeah, it is. It's kind of like a hall of mirrors to a certain extent.
Exactly. Yeah. So trying to use logic kind of falls apart at a certain point. You have to. I found that in the book, I had to trust my intuition a lot more than I had thought stepping into the process.
Now let me ask you this. Now on our shows, I've been doing the shows 11 years. The Campfire Show for 7 years. So. On that show, we talk about stories. We love stories. Today, can you leave us with one of your favorite owl stories in regard to this phenomenon?
Ay, ay, ay. Okay, so So this is a book that's got UFO right on the cover, right? There's no UFO on the cover. There's no photograph of the pictures of an owl, but it says UFO on the cover.
Right.
And there's a lot of books out there, right, that have, you know, there I was in a lonely road and, the you know, they came upon the UFO and then the occupants came out and ushered me in. And so there's those kind of stories, right? And I don't have any of those stories in this book. The stories that I've collected are extremely subtle. So here, this is one that I like a lot. It's a fellow named Ben. And this has kind of got a two-part thing to the story.
Okay.
So he's got his kids, and he's driving them home from a birthday party. They were at a roller skating birthday party. He's driving all the kids home, and the kids are young. They're all in the car, and they're like, you know, come on, tell us a story, tell us a story. So he's got his own kids in the story, and all, you know, I mean, in the car, in the van, and then so he says, okay, and he just right at that moment he said, I'm going to tell him about my UFO experiences. These are the things that he had kept the lid clamped down. He did not talk about these things. So he shares the story, shares a bunch of stories, and it culminates one after another. He said he told him, and this is interesting, he said he told it in sort of a campfire way, framed it that way so as not to freak the kids out, really. But they culminated with a missing time event that he had. So that was the final story, missing time event. Very telling if people have had UFO, you know, type stories. Mm-hmm. So he had a missing time event. So he tells that story. As soon as he tells the story, an owl flies in front of the car. Actually, it flies over the top of the car, flies out in the headlights, and leads him down the road a little bit. Now, there's a little bit more to that story, but that's the core of it. Later, he takes his kids out for a hike, right? So they go on a hike, and they're on this trail, and this owl follows them. You know, they're walking down the trail. The kids love it. It's super cool, right? So they walk along the trail. The owl flies to the next tree and just watches them go by, and then the owl flies to the next tree. He said it was pretty eerie, kind of creepy. It scared him, but the kids loved it. That night, it's time to read a bedtime story to the kids. He said, okay, pick out a book. So they pick out a book. He didn't pick it out. They picked out a book called Say Boo. I feel very proud. This is a little kid's book. It's a footnoted in my book. So it's the story is about a ghost, mm-hmm. a ghost named Ben. And Ben, the ghost, has lost his voice. He can't say boo, right? So he instead walks up to a cow, and instead of saying boo, he says moo. And it goes on like that. So it's got little cute cartoons in it and such. So, at one point, so he's going to see it. So the ghost has lost his voice, and he's going to go see an owl. And so that obviously, instead of saying boo, Halloween's coming. So he needs to scare kids for Halloween, right? Because he's a ghost. So he sees the owl and he says hoo instead. So there's a line in the book. Ben is reading to his own kids about a ghost named Ben, and it says in the book, Ben looked up and saw a large owl in a pine tree. Right then, the dog starts barking, arf, 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 arf. He's like, something's going on downstairs. So he gets up off the, you know, from reading from the kids, runs down the stairs, opens the door, and looks out into the yard. Nothing. He's drawn to look up in the pine tree and sees a large owl. He's convinced it's the same owl that had followed him during the day. He doesn't know that for sure, but that's his sense. So the last words he read were, Ben looked up in a pine tree and saw a large owl. The next thing that happens, the dog barks, he sees a large owl in a pine tree. So in doing this, you know, I have to communicate with him, and I'm like, okay, I'm writing his story, so I write it out, and it goes back and forth. And as we're going through this, Ben says, these are the same stories, these two stories, right? He mm-hmm. was finding his voice in the car. He had spoken his truth, found his voice, spoken his truth, and told his kids of his experiences. And he was, in a way, the entire thing was punctuated by an owl leading him down the road.
Wow.
The follow-up story is the story of a ghost named Ben who is also trying to find his voice. So this was really powerful, not so much each individual story, but seen side by side. When I wrote it up, you know, he reviewed it and he said, this is the same story. So that's a very simple story, right? There's nobody's lying on a table getting a needle right. know, in their ear. But to me, it has a deeper power because there's something very mystical about these kind of events that I once again, you know, how do you untangle the knot?
Well, it's so interesting to me because, again, doing these shows for quite a few years now, you know, when I first started out, I thought, whether it's ghosts or UFOs or whatever it might be, I thought, well, this is going to be great. I'm going to do these interviews for 6 months, and I'm going to interview all these great people like Brad Steiger and Stanton Friedman, and they are great and interesting people. But I thought, oh, I'm going to have all this stuff figured out. And the truth is, I know less now than I did when I started. But I will say this, I think, you know, and I've said this on the programs before, I used to think of all this stuff as separate, very distinct phenomena. But the longer I get into it, I think that it's much more like a melting pot, that much of these different things that we talk about, UFOs, ghosts, maybe certain cryptids, aliens, all these different topics, I think it's somehow there's interconnections and blending that I never imagined when I first started looking at all this.
I agree. So my sense is, and I struggle with this in the book, because, you know, in a way, it's not a traditional UFO book. It's a book that how to say this. So I had the same experience, right? So my initial thought was, well, listen, I've started to collect these owl stories. I've got, you know, like I'll write a magazine length article, and that'll be, you know, I'll sum it all up. You know, owls, synchronicities, and UFOs, because my senses are all blended together. And that magazine length article is now a nearly 400 page book. And I've got so much extra stuff that I couldn't put into the book. So, and I, again, I'm just like you, I am no closer to having an answer. I am more, how to say this? I guess I'm more at peace with the fact that there's a mystery. So my sense is, right, you know, so you have a wagon wheel, right? And so there's one spoke of the wagon wheel is the UFO thing. One spoke is the ghost thing. One spoke is a synchronicity thing. One spoke is psychic phenomena. So those are all seem to be, but what my question is, what's at the core of the wheel? What's at the hub of the axle?
That's a great analogy, yeah.
Yeah, so something is at play in our reality. And it doesn't seem to be, it doesn't share our reality the same way that a physical owl shares our reality. It shares our reality the same way that like a ghost will step into our reality, make itself known, and then just kind of ease out. So something is going on. I'm absolutely convinced of that, no doubt in my mind, just from my own experiences, from the research. It's been hammered home to me so many times. The meaning of it, the source of it, I have no answer. My only thought, though, my only sort of advice in a way is to pay attention when these things show up. And they are, my sense is, they're not happening randomly. They're happening and playing out for a reason.
Mike, if people want to join you on your exploration and follow your books and your blog and all of that, how can they plug into the blog and the book?
Well, blog is very easy to find. It's just Google my name, Mike Cleland, owls, it'll come right up. Google UFO owls, it'll come right up. And not only does UFO owls come up, my name comes up at the top of that list. So it's like the first 8 or 9 things on the list when you Google it. So then you could just go to hiddenexperience.blogspot.com. It'll show right up. And from there, I've got a series of podcasts. I haven't done one in a while just because I got so immersed in the book project. I kind of put the podcast on hold. And I've been doing this since 2009, which good grief is 7 years now. So there's 7 years worth of my own accounts, as well as the research I've done. And then, typical of things, it's like links to other articles that I find interesting.
Fantastic.
And if anyone has an owl story that they think is interesting, I'm eager to hear it.
Well, you know, this has been a great show, I think. It is certainly a different take on this whole phenomenon and something I'd never heard of before, and it is utterly fascinating. We really appreciate your time today, Mike Cleland.
Thanks so much. It was a joy.
And thank you very much for tuning in to UFO Encounters, and I'm sure Mike would agree. Keep your eye to the sky. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.